The eyes of the nation turn to Gainesville as white supremacist Richard Spencer tries and fails to make a speech on the UF campus. The Jaguars apologize to city military leaders, and Duval County schools miss out on the state's Schools of Hope funding. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to get our podcast on iTunes and through our app. Just ahead, you can get on the line now as we talk about the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. The number to join the show, 549-2937. Then later, don't miss it as Reveal host and Jacksonville native Al Letson. He's back in town this week, and he'll step into the studio to talk about race in America. It's a preview of his conversation later today at the Jacksonville Bar Association. Plus, a special treat. We'll have a live in studio performance from the Kristen Lee duo. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday and time to talk about a busy news week as we welcome Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times-Union.
Good morning.
Claire Goforth is here, editor of Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal.
Good to be here.
And our own contributor, Charles Griggs, joining the show.
Good morning.
Lots to talk about, everything from what happened with the Jaguars and city military leaders to Duval County's swing and a miss on getting some state funding for schools and more. But our top story this morning, opponents of white supremacist Richard Spencer were successful in drowning him out Thursday at the University of Florida in Gainesville. Far more opponents than supporters in the crowd when Spencer finally spoke Thursday on the campus. He was shouted down by most of those in the audience and never actually got to give his speech. And only a handful of his supporters wound up attending. That despite the fact that his group, the National Policy Institute, distributed tickets to the event. Now, Spencer, of course, holds widely despised and racist and anti-Semitic views. And UF was bracing for the worst when they finally allowed him to speak. This, particularly after what happened a few months ago at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, when Spencer and his ilk, other fellow racist, white supremacist protesters, showed up to protest the removal of a Robert E. Lee statue. Things got out of hand in Charlottesville, and people were injured and one killed. Luckily, that did not happen yesterday in the swamp. Still, though, it was a vibrant debate over the role of the First Amendment and where are the limits of free speech, what constitutes hate speech. We're going to begin the hour with a discussion of that and take your calls. 549-2937 is the number to join us. As we start this off with the roundtable, emails to firstcoastconnect at wjct.org, tweets to at Melissa in Jax. You can also weigh in on Facebook. Charles Griggs, let's begin with you. Spencer, really, it was a real bust for him yesterday in Gainesville, much to the delight of the many protesters who showed up to try to foil his plans.
Well, it looks like free speech worked. I mean, in this instance here, because, you know, he got a chance to have his forum, but unfortunately for him, people in the community rejected his message, and that's how free speech works. So he can't argue that he didn't get an opportunity to hold his forum, to hold his space. But those voices that don't think that his rhetoric is the way the country should be going or that community should be headed, drowned him out.
And he never got to talk about his views, Claire Goforth, namely that the U.S. should be a white ethno state.
Yes, it does seem like we are currently at a turning point, I think happily, because this white nationalism had been building momentum and we were starting to get the perception that it was really growing. And when an event like this happens and he's drowned out and the protesters outnumber the supporters probably 10 to 1, it does give a good signal to the rest of us that perhaps that we're closing that chapter. A brief chapter.
Yeah. Rick Scott had to call for a state of emergency in Alachua County for this. It cost about $600,000 for security to make sure that public safety was guaranteed. And Dan Scanlon, of course, Spencer has been targeting public universities because they are bastions of free speech and dialogue.
Which is how he was able to get in there, because the state university system could not deny him access. But then in what way do you think it's smart to immediately start denigrating their football team, basically claiming that they're not exercising free speech, and basically stating most important free speech event of your lifetime, and you responded by becoming cartoonish characters of the left? Then he puts two rows of his own people in front, and then there was a separation of about five rows, and then everybody else, as far as I could tell from watching the video stream, were protesters with the cops in the upper balcony keeping an eye. So all he got to do was attempt to defend himself. More or less, he looked a little stupid.
Tim Gibbons.
There is an interesting debate, I think, on the limits of free speech. I tend to be a fairly, First Amendment absolutist, and I find this sort of thing interesting, where you have someone with views that the community doesn't like, and they show up, and they, as Charles said, they use their First Amendment rights, and you end up with, the speaker looking rather foolish. I think one of the things that has to be noted is, in some ways, how well this worked out. There wasn't violence. There wasn't, widespread riots in the street sort of thing. There was literally two opposing forms of speech came together, and, we ended up with what we had.
And one won and one lost.
Yeah. In the past, he's been used to kind of coming in and having his way, because not a lot of information has gotten out prior to the events for people to organize themselves in a protest, in a safe protest manner. So in this case, enough information got out to enough people who were concerned about the message he was bringing for them to be able to counteract that and be able to protect the community from that information.
Now, this guy has really gained prominence recently, in part because of what happened in Charlottesville, Claire, but also because this video went viral showing someone punching him out. Did you see that? This was maybe 6 or 8 months ago. People got all excited because there was video of someone punching him out when he was standing on a street corner espousing his views. What he wants is a separate nation for white people. That and his vocal support for President Trump, he's become a flashpoint for some of the divisions in this country.
He certainly has. And Richard Spencer, after yesterday's event, painted it as a success. And that's really what he had to do in that situation to try to save face. I don't think that it was a success for his cause. I wonder what's going to happen in coming months, because he has speeches planned. I believe the University of North Carolina is one of them. Now, Florida, the taxpayers of Florida have paid $600,000 for Richard Spencer to come to our state to give a speech. It'll be interesting to see how these universities in other states handle charging him for the appearance, because it is permissible to have time, place, and manner restrictions on speech, including some fees.
And when you have the interesting point that if you have, the Jazz Fest, if you have any big public event, you're going to have, and you require a police presence, you charge the organizers. And at some point, the question of, if you know you are putting something on that will require that police presence, pony up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And Dan Scanlon, didn't they put Spencer way on the edge of the campus? Whereas in Charlottesville, everything went south because it was all happening right in the city center.
Everything, I've been told that the police were separating the pros and the cons. In many cases, what I saw were a few occasional confrontations, but only one where someone actually got punched. Literally, the only real violence occurred around 5:30, long after the campus had announced that Spencer had left the campus. They went on the PA system and said, he is gone. Somebody in a Jeep fired a shot somewhere near the shooting site, but there was no impact, no one injured. So literally, somehow, $600,000 worth of preventative police medicine seemed to have worked yesterday, and UF and Florida came out for once. You can't say only in Florida. This time, we look like we behaved pretty well, considering.
And I think that's a good point to note there, because one of the other things in Charlottesville was the a general belief that the police did not do their job well in separating the two sides, in actually keeping the peace. Mm-hmm. And, we talk about police a lot in the show, and I think it must be noted that they appeared to be doing a professional job there of actually making it as calm of a situation as you could hope for.
Including a busload of St. John's County Sheriff's Office guys in riot gear, a little impressive looking when they tweeted that photo.
He certainly didn't get what he came for, because that's not what he was expecting. I don't think he expected that it would be so much pushback. He would get the crowd he was looking for. He could have his speaking time, get his message across, but he didn't expect that type of disruption in the facility. So that's what...
Even his news conference did not go too well. In fact, many of the reporters, I am told from reading tweets, asked him, what color do you think I am? And he had to respond to try to sound neutral, to try to sound like an educated, well-dressed spokesperson, but yet it came out.
Let's go to your calls now as we talk about the biggest headlines from the week with our Friday roundtable. 949-2937. Mike is in Murray Hill. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Good morning. How's everyone doing today?
Great, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting topic. I'm glad you had time to discuss it today. You know, I will state right now that I'm a mixed race. I'm Blackfoot Indian. I'm Cherokee Indian. I'm Anglo-Saxon and Scottish. That being said, I find it quite abhorrent, including some of the statements by one of your guests, that we would take glee or any enjoyment at shouting down someone, regardless of their opinion, as though that is discourse, as though protest in and of itself was the ultimate right of people to suppress intelligent conversation. I mean, I'd agree with the thoughts of someone else, but I don't need a bunch of uncivilized people making noise and a ruckus. Just, we can't have discourse that way. So to even pretend like it's acceptable to suppress free speech as individuals. I want everyone to remember, too, what happened in Nazi Germany. It didn't start with the government shutting down free speech. It started with mobs of people who supported the government shutting down dissenting opinions. The mob mentality is not good. We need to be civilized. We need to talk properly. And if somebody has views we don't like, listen to him. And then just go about your business. He can't physically do anything. So it's very irrational. We're pretending like we need to nanny or mind the thoughts of people so they can't reason for themselves what's right or
sure.
wrong.
Sure. Let me ask you as a corollary to that, Mike, since we're going to move on and discuss another story in a minute, related to this. On the flip side of your argument, what is your opinion on the Jaguar players taking the knee?
Feel free. Go ahead, do whatever you want to do. I don't really have an opinion because it's not my position to have an opinion. That's their choice to do what they want to do. Now, on the other hand, if other people want to rebuttal that by not paying tickets or doing whatever or using economic means, that's their choice. But I'm not going to go shout them down. I'm not going to suppress them.
Gotcha.
I don't think either side, you know, we're talking about sides and who, you know, who's right and whose dialogue is correct and what's important, what's not important. I mean, you know, Richard Spencer's stuff is way out there. He may have some salient points. I don't know because I can't hear the guy.
Okay.
I don't know what his real opinion is.
Thanks, Mike. I hear you, Mike. I take your point. Let's discuss Mike's point. Claire.
Sure, I'll go. The difference is, in this case, Richard Spencer's views are abhorrent. He is a racist. He is a white nationalist. He wants the United States to be a white nation, which would require us to purge our borders of all people who are not Caucasian. And where are we going to set that bar? In Nazi Germany, they weren't shouting down the Nazis. They were shouting down the rest of the people. Richard Spencer is essentially akin to a Nazi in this instance.
Yeah, and also he started this. I mean, his movement is the one that started the violence that's been going on. It's associated with his rhetoric. So you know, if he wanted someone to you know sit idly by and listen to his conversation and his views, then he should have had a different approach in the very beginning because a lot of the incidents that took place in Charlottesville was because of the violence that was instigated by his rhetoric.
And that I think actually is the key point. And I said earlier, I'm pretty much a First Amendment absolutist, and I have a slight
including with Spencer.
Including with Spencer, yeah. No, I mean this idea that just because you're a Nazi, you shouldn't be able to speak. I actually do disagree with that. I think that the First Amendment is designed to protect
unpopular all forms
views.
Of speech,
well, and mainly unpopular views. But you look at this situation where it's not that Spencer's ideas couldn't get out. If the caller wants to know what Spencer believes, there's a million places he can find that information. This particular thing was a piece of performance art that was being broadcast as, you know, around the country of here's what he believes. And if you're doing performance art like that and your audience chooses to become part of that art performance by drowning you out, I'm perfectly fine with that.
He was also griping from stage that we're supposed to be in a university, a place of learning, and you're not letting me speak, which sounds like he was griping a bit. Again, unlike Nazi Germany, right now, on any computer, on any smartphone, you can find out his statements, his own words on his own site, and find out what he stands for and what the other side does that was not around there. All you had was maybe a pamphlet back in 1942.
And I'm pretty sure Richard Spencer spoke those words, so he was actually able to speak. I'm not saying that he shouldn't have been able to speak. I do think perhaps we could have charged more because of the security costs, but the people who were shouting at him also have a right to speak.
All right. Rick on the north side. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, I'm calling about the players kneeling. I'm kind of puzzled to find out that a Green Beret told Colin Kaepernick the best way to protest, you know, and not disrespect the flag or the military was not to sit down but to take a knee. Seeing that a Green Beret told him that, I mean, he's military, he's a Green Beret. Why is the press not giving that any story? You know, don't you think that would change people's opinions?
Yeah. Thanks for that, Rick. You know, we did mention that on this program a couple of weeks ago, but I don't think it's as widely known as other elements of that. That does bring us to our next story. The Jaguars' big apology to local military brass. Did you see this? Jaguars President Mark Lamping wrote a letter apologizing to Bill Spann, Director of Military Affairs and the Veterans Department for the city of Jacksonville. Now, the letter came after that Jaguars game at Wembley Stadium in London last month, where about a dozen players took a knee on the sideline during the national anthem. It's part of the player protest that's been sweeping the NFL in response to police shootings of black men in this country and racial injustices more broadly. Behind them, their teammates stood and locked arms with each other, including Jaguars owner Shad Khan and head coach Doug Marrone. But in the apology letter, Lamping said, after meeting with the director of military affairs, Mr. Spann, and others, the team understands how the events could have been misinterpreted and hope their apology to the local military brass is accepted. The number to join us as we discuss this is 549-2937. What do you think of the Jaguars' apology to the city? And as Rick on the north side pointed out, Colin Kaepernick he would sit during the anthem. And then a retired Green Beret wrote an open letter asking him to reconsider that. At that point, Kaepernick met in person with the Green Beret. And the guy said to him and another player, you may not realize this, but what you're doing is disrespecting my service and that of people who've died. Can't you do something more respectful? And this Green Beret said, when we are doing military exercises and things, sometimes we will kneel. Why don't you do something like that? So they started kneeling because they thought that would be more respectful during the anthem. But it's not being perceived that way. So what about then the fact that the team has sent this letter of apology?
Well, I spent the whole day writing this story and updating it for the Times Union. And ultimately, I realized that we didn't talk about the reason why this was being done in the first place. And so I gave Juan Gray a call over at the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And he's a military veteran from 20 years. And he laid it on the line saying it has nothing to do with the flag. He says, the president hijacked something that has nothing to do with flags and soldiers. But I was getting calls from military vets who said they'll never watch another game. They literally unplugged their TV when they saw this. And I've also heard people say that it was totally disrespecting of them to stand during God Save the Queen. Others saying they don't know if the Jaguars actually understood at that game in London that standing during that showed a visual disrespect for the U.S. So this is a really multi-layered pie.
That was the optics problem. Yeah. I don't know what they should have done during God Save the Queen, but
they might not have stopped to consider that piece of it. Yeah,
right.
Although they did apologize for that too.
But what's interesting, and the headlines even on this piece of Jaguars apologize. I've seen several Jaguars apologize to the city. Jaguars apologize to the military. Jaguars apologize to fans. I think the Jaguars apologize to Bill Spann, and you know, take that for what it means on a broader thing.
And some military leaders who were with Spann at that meeting.
Right, some of who did not accept the apology. But you have the, kind of the bigger issue of are they apologizing for the players protesting, or are they apologizing for not thinking it through as much for the fact that they were doing it on foreign soil, and that gave a different tone to it. If you read the entire apology, it kind of sounded more like we apologize for kneeling in London, not so much that we apologize for kneeling.
And they really didn't think it through. They were admitting that they really didn't think all of the optics through, which, you know, standing during God Save the Queen would present. But like Dan said, the bigger picture here is that the protest, you know, is not about the flag. You know, so you know, the owners' meeting this week proved that. I mean, so the owners are being unified in their effort. They're being as unified as they possibly can to support the players, because they know that the players are the product, you know, the entertainment. So if the owners come out with something that is productive in terms of the response that the players are looking for, then that'll be the big win here. I think that if football, they had reductions in ratings last season. So it's not like, you know, people aren't not watching for various reasons. They may be
NASCAR
doing other things.
NASCAR has had reduction in ratings. Yeah. NASCAR ain't doing nothing with the flag.
Yeah, it's really easy to pin it on this one particular issue, but there is a complexity of issues that are going on with the NFL and sports entertainment in general that could cause the ratings to go down.
Still, though, I think it did have at least a short-term impact.
There were empty seats on Sunday. You could see them on the broadcast. And there is actually a social media campaign right now to boycott the Veterans Day weekend Jaguars game. And this is being done by military veterans.
Yeah, there was a boycott on Facebook event for the previous game. I was at the game. I go to all of them. There weren't as many empty seats as it looked in some of the pans on the camera. And nobody really is taking into account the fact that the Jacksonville Icemen had their inaugural game just the evening before, which I also attended. Go Icemen. And it was a long weekend of sports. And I mean,
Claire Goforth, big sports booster.
I am into sports. So 9,000 people going to a hockey game on Saturday night might have kind of taken some of the seats from the Jags the next day. But I mean, when you go to the games, the NFL does so much to honor the military. I mean, they are constantly bringing veterans out on the field. People stand, people weep when they tell the stories of these veterans. They have the third quarter bell rung by someone in the military. I mean, the NFL supports the military. When they took the knee in England, really what they were doing was showing a united front against the comments of President Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to your calls on this one now. Will is in Arlington. Hey, Will, happy Friday.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that it's still disappointing that the discussion over the protests and the kneeling has shifted from what Colin Kaepernick originally intended, which was trying to talk about police brutality in America, and it's, you know, been co-opted into this whole, you know, discussion or talk about patriotism. And even if some of the NFL players who do kneel may still do that for that reason, it's kind of disappointing that, you know, all this, the majority of the talk, it seems, has been about the most recent thing that with President Trump starting this discussion.
Okay. Thanks for that call. And yeah, I mean, when Kaepernick started his protests, people really weren't clear at first what he was doing. And I think the recent polling, though, seems to have penetrated the American public more fully, that more Americans do seem to have a clearer picture of why the players are kneeling.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
though this narrative has sort of shifted to the controversy over the anthem and the flag. Yeah. People, the majority of Americans do know why they're doing it.
Yeah. And again, the owners from the meeting this week, from all indications, is that they are sitting up and paying attention to what the point that the players are trying to get across, and they're actually working towards, you know, trying to help develop some ideas and solutions to get, you know, to make things better regarding the issues that the players are kneeling for. So if that happens, then all of this would be, you know, for the better, because all the players will be standing. We'll all be one big happy family.
They all still stood on Sunday, didn't they? Yeah.
Most of them?
Yeah. It's only a handful now are kneeling. But okay. I think it's because you have movement with the owners.
And I understand the caller's frustration that we're not focusing on the reason for this. But in some ways, I believe when you have protest and it just galvanizes people just having this sort of debate, in some ways that is the point of protest. That, yes, we don't want to lose the point of the original desire for it, but we're sitting here talking about it because it has become a furor overall, which is, if you're protesting, people should be made uncomfortable, that you've won if that's what happens
in
protest.
And the point needs to be made that there are people on the other side who are non-military people who are not watching the NFL because they're not supporting the players who are kneeling. So people in support of Kaepernick are, you know, opting out as well. So this cuts on both sides. So it's not really just a one-angle attempt at protesting.
And it drives me insane every time I see the polls that say, are you not watching the games because of the protest? And it's just like a binary thing. And we assume that that means it's because they don't like the players protesting. I can easily say I'm not watching games because of the protest because I support them.
That's right.
And the bottom line from some of the veterans I spoke to is it's about the buck. It's about the dollar and the lost revenue, which is why you had the apology from the Jaguars, which is why you had this made a discussion at the NFL owners meeting this week.
Sure. One more call and then we'll move on. Mike in San Marco. Hello, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to join my voice in the chorus. Frankly, you know, I think what they said, I don't recall who the comment was, but they had been saying that Trump had hijacked the protest for his own political ends. And, you know, Trump also has a well-developed media, conservative media, that's putting the word out that these folks are disrespecting the flag, and they, you know, they're operating 24 hours a day. And when you're an NFL owner and you've got only a few minutes during a game to make your point, or you're an NFL player, or you're in the NFL and you're trying to stand united, I think, you know, they probably need to be a lot more clear about what the protest is, what they're doing, why they're doing it, and not leaving it for just people to see and interpret. And they need to be, I mean, the NFL owners have a whole network behind them. They have a large public relations and marketing arm behind them as well. And so it seems to me like the NFL needs to, if they're going to stand behind the players on this, they need to get unified and very clear and consistent and simple with regards to what the message is that they're supporting in order to combat a right-wing media that's doing its best to paint this as something that it's not. And that's just my comment. Thanks for listening.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Similar remark on our Facebook page from Kelly. The Jags don't need to apologize, but Shad Khan should match his donation to Trump's campaign by giving $1 million to efforts for racial justice.
It wasn't his campaign. It was his inauguration.
That's right. It was his inauguration. Thank you for that. And most NFL owners donated to, and a lot of these guys donate on both sides of the aisle, of course. You know, these players are doing a silent protest. They don't have a microphone. They have the cameras on them. And they're kneeling to say, we are not okay with people getting shot and killed, and nobody's going to jail for it. That is the nut of this protest.
In a violent game, this is one moment of quiet support for a cause.
Yeah. Okay. Quickly, a swing and a miss for the Duval County Public Schools. DCPS applied for but failed to win a statewide competition for the so-called Schools of Hope money, a pot of $140 million the state set aside for certain public schools to turn around D or F grades, and for certain charter schools located near underperforming public schools. Now, Duval wanted money for George Washington Carver, Arlington Heights, Gregory Drive Elementary, and for Arlington Middle and Ramona Boulevard Elementary Schools, but no dice. We will get another shot later, though, it seems.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that the rejection wasn't political, even though some of the schools that some of the districts that were awarded money were a part of the lawsuit that the district is participating in to have these Schools of Hope legislation overturned. So it is, it's politics are being played across the table here, and this may be a shot across the bow for those districts that are not so happy with the Schools of Hope legislation, the bill being passed and implemented in the first place.
Yeah, and at the same time, Duval has joined 12 other districts in suing the state, a battle over how much authority districts have over charter schools. Yeah. So this is a complicated local and state issue when it comes to education that we'll continue to follow. Meanwhile, it's our look at the strange, ridiculous, and just plain bizarre from around the week, the state this week. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida, where we begin at, yes, 7-Eleven. Only in Florida does a 7-Eleven employee get attacked with hot nacho cheese. Anne Marie LaFlame in Melbourne had asked a customer not to open the hot cheese dispenser, but the customer got irate and called her several names. When the customer tried to buy nachos and a sandwich, LaFlame refused her service. The customer responded by throwing a full cup of nacho cheese at LaFlame.
Ouch, yummy.
When police arrived, they found LaFlame aflame with nacho cheese all over her hands and feet.
It's not a good idea to throw cheese.
So this is a hot topic in the news?
That's a hot topic. And only in, now, we like to make fun of our Florida politicians.
No.
Only in Florida do congressional candidates in the state say they have been on a spaceship with aliens. A 2009 video of Republican congressional candidate Bettina Rodriguez Aguilera says three blonde, big-bodied beings, two females and one male, visited her from outer space when she was seven. She says she has communicated with them telepathically many times since. Aguilera says the aliens reminded her of the famous statue in Rio de Janeiro, Christ the Redeemer. The aliens have told her many things. Among them, there are 30,000 skulls that are different from human skulls in a cave on the Mediterranean island of Malta. The World's Energy Center is in Africa. The Coral Castle, a limestone... No comments to any of these. The Coral Castle, a limestone tourist attraction in South Florida, is actually an ancient Egyptian pyramid.
We're just nodding along. We all think this is right.
This all makes perfect sense.
Go home.
God is a universal energy. I actually believe that one. She also said the aliens mentioned ISIS, but they did not clarify if they meant the terrorist organization or the ancient Egyptian
god.
No,
that the seems ICE like an sold at the 7-Eleven.
That seems like an important question, though. You think someone would ask?
Perfect pedigree for a politician.
Right? I mean, how many aliens are in Congress?
She'll be right at home if she wins.
Those are lizard people. Ban those anyway, right?
Charles Griggs, Claire Goforth, Tim Gibbons, and Dan Scanlon, four all-stars. And thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We'll be back with Al Letson. Stay with us.
Vietnam, a war with a rock and roll soundtrack. But there's so much more to it than most of us realize. Tune in to Time to Lay It Down, the soundtrack of the Vietnam War, and listen to the music that expressed the deep divisions about the war, but was also a lifeline for GIs in Vietnam and a source of healing when they came home.
Sunday night at 9 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele, back and ready for another live broadcast of A Prairie Home Companion. This weekend, we welcome Randy Newman. Is that true? Randy Newman? My goodness. Also, Margot Price. She's so good. Comedian Alice Wetterlin. Very funny. The First Call Radio Players will be there. A bit of comedy with our acting company. And I'll have a brand new song of the week. All this and more live from the Fitzgerald Theater. Hope you'll join us.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Folk, blues, jazz, R&B, country, western, Americana. It's all acoustic and it's all in one place. And that one place is String Theory. And you can hear String Theory Friday nights at 11 p.m. only on 89.9 WJCT. String Theory, the very best of modern acoustic music. This and every Friday night at 11 p.m. on WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, nationally renowned playwright, poet, performer, and national radio host of the Peabody winning program Reveal, Al Letson, is one of this area's leading talents and change agents. And this week, people have a couple of chances to see him. Letson speaks today at noon at a meeting of the Jacksonville Bar Association, leading a conversation about race in America. You can also check him out Saturday night at a performance in the Cork Arts District. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Reveal host Al Letson. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Good to have you. And Tad Delegal, he's president of the Jacksonville Bar Association.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to have you. And Tad, the bar has brought Al to town to talk today. Of course, Al, you're from this area. You live in California now, but come back all the time.
This is home.
It's great to have you here.
It is so good to be home. Hello, Jacksonville.
And we're happy to see you.
I'm happy to be here.
You're going to be talking about a topic that is much on the minds of the nation right now, race in America.
Yeah. I feel like we've been on this trajectory for a long time in this country. And now, like, you know, it's kind of bubbling to the surface. We always get into this place in America. I can think, you know, I'm 45 and I can think back at my life and see like where it bubbles up. But it feels like the temperature has changed a little bit. And so for a lot of different mm-hmm. reasons. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like we're grappling with some big questions.
You interviewed this white supremacist Richard Spencer on your show Reveal some time ago.
Yeah, I talked to him twice. Richard is actually, I was about to say he's an interesting guy and use that as a nice way to describe what I think about him. But instead, I'll say he's actually not that interesting. His ideas are pretty old and tired. And when you push him down the line to get to what he really believes, I heard somebody in your roundtable say that he's sort of a Nazi or like he is. That's what he believes in. He believes that this country, actually, he doesn't even really believe in America. He believes that what he's trying to build is what comes next. So he's not like he's this patriot who believes that America should be this. He wants what's next. And what's next for him is a white ethno state where everybody, and he says that people will voluntarily leave, but I'm not going anywhere. So.
Yeah, and a lot of other people aren't either.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
So, Tad, this looks to be a really interesting discussion today. Why did the bar decide to have it?
Well, we've been seeing some of the same things that Al's been talking about, that, you know, there's been a negative turn in our society about on issues of race. And this is something that the bar felt strongly about. We're taking some actions ourselves to try to engage the community in discussions, the legal community, about race, and to have more programming about how to respect differences of all type. And we thought that having Al here would be a very way to positively discuss with our members the issues that that this society is dealing with.
And a lot of your membership may hear some things that might make them uncomfortable or might make them think about this in a new way.
Sure, and that's part of the process. And, you know, one of the things we're doing, for instance, is we're kicking off a study circles program where we have attorneys sit down and start talking about race. Because, you know, my belief, and I think a lot of people's beliefs, is if we start talking more, if we start sharing more, then we're going to have less of the polarization that hurts us all.
I know. I mean, you've told me some stories about your life experience, Al, just a few. There's many more I'm sure you could share. Just about what it's like to be an African-American guy walking around in America, things that have happened to you. Are those some of the things that you might talk about today?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that like the number one thing that happens when we get into race discussions in America is people become very rigid and feel like their experience of America is what everybody's experience of America is. And I would say that in order for us to move forward, we all have to be willing to be uncomfortable. We all have to be willing to push past the talking points that you see. And for me as a storyteller, the best way to do that is to tell stories. So I'll be talking about, you know, things like what it was like to grow up as a young black man here in North Florida. And all those experiences aren't bad, but there are definitely, you know, some flashpoints that most people, specifically like most white people, don't have to experience. And when I tell these stories to like my white friends, they believe me, but they can't believe that that still happens in America and specifically in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, if something isn't your daily experience, you just don't have to think about
right,
it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
One thing that we need in America is if we want to make America great again, we need to make America have empathy and for each other and for the world. And I think that, first of all, I reject the idea of make America great again. Like that, it has all these connotations to me as an African-American who, you know, America has been good to me, but also saying make America great again means that there was a time when it was great and it wasn't a time in America where everybody was treated with equality, right? So that again has problems with me. But make America great, it has to start with empathy. It has to start with understanding, you know, what the other side is going through and how we all come together because we're all American citizens, you know, so we should all be working for each other.
Is today's event sold out?
I think we're having difficulty finding space for people. Yeah, there's a lot of interest in it. I heard from a couple of people that had some difficulty getting in.
This is at the Omni today?
At the Omni, yeah.
Today at noon?
Yeah.
Okay, so not too late if you want to squeeze in to see Al. But then you're also performing tomorrow night at the Cork Arts District on King Street.
Yes. I'm so I still have a studio at Cork, me and my partner in crime, Willie Evans Jr. We make a little podcast called Earthang, which is on WJCT, which will be coming back soon, I promise. But yes, my buddy and partner in crime, Barbara Colicello, has her spot there, and I'll be doing some excerpts of a new play that I'm working on. And that new play that I'm working on is about race, but also in this moment right now. A couple months ago, like in August, I got wrapped up in between a fight with Antifa and quote unquote white supremacists.
Let me bring that up quickly. I almost forgot. You had a viral video moment where these Antifa guys were beating up this other guy at a rally in Berkeley, and you stepped in and stopped them from basically killing this guy. And these were racist people.
The whole, what the play is about is really about the nuance of the situation. That I would not, the man that I ended up protecting, I'm hesitant to call him a quote unquote white supremacist. Like, he's not Richard Spencer. But he said some pretty horrible things online. And he's done some pretty horrible things. So, I got caught in the middle of it. But I got caught in the middle of it because I see his humanity.
And that's what the play will be about, that experience.
Yes.
That should be really interesting.
It's crazy.
So that's tomorrow that's tomorrow night, 7 and 9:30 p.m. at Babs Lab, Cork Arts District North, 603 King Street in Riverside. Go check that out. And if you can, maybe get a seat today at noon at the Omni. Ted Delegal, president of the Jack's Bar, radio reveal host Al Letson. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
With so much going on in the news, people's nerves can begin to fray. And it has been one of those weeks.
Why would you ask something that dumb? Huh? That's a dumb question.
Time to look for some answers and respond to some of your always smart questions on the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm Ira Flatow. On the next Science Friday, the latest on gravitational waves and why that collision of two neutron stars is so important to understanding our universe. Plus, Walter Isaacson's new book about how Leonardo da Vinci engineered Mona Lisa's iconic smile and how da Vinci so wonderfully bridged science and art. It's all on Science Friday from PRI.
Fridays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Appointment with Public Radio's favorite family doc on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health. It'll be a jam-packed hour on healthy living, including this recipe for
the Midwest Beet Burger.
We always have a great time. So will you on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX.
Sundays at 5 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, South Africa's forgotten jazz history. With music by Abdullah Ibrahim.
The only reality is a dream, because everything that you see in reality started with a dream.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, she's a soulful vocalist, relatively new to the Jacksonville music scene, with an energy and style all her own. Kristen Lee has performed all over the world, but she's currently focused on writing original material and playing in spots around town, along with guitarist Javian Francis. You can watch the duo at Harpoon Louie's on November 10th and the Volstead downtown on November 18th. We've got a special treat for you right now. A live in studio preview as the Kristen Lee Duo joins the show. Hey, guys.
How you doing?
Good morning. Thanks for being with us. So tell me a little bit about your music, Kristen.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm basically just a big mix of soul and Motown. I'm from Michigan, so I love that Motown sound, and just kind of trying to find my way as an artist and see where I fit in this Jacksonville music scene, and it's a great music scene.
It is. And what brought you here from cold and snowy Detroit?
Well, I was on cruise ships, and then I literally picked a place on the map, and I said, hey, why don't I move to Jacksonville? And it ended up being a good decision.
Really? That random?
That random.
Wow. And so how are you liking it so far?
I love it. I'm a bit of a free spirit, I guess you could say.
I guess so. So you're going to be performing in a few spots in November around the city, and you're going to be performing something for us right now. Tell us a little bit about this song.
I love Etta James. I love all kinds of soul and that style of music. And I'm lucky enough to be accompanied this morning by Javian Francis. He's fantastic. And we've been, playing together around town. I also play with guitarist Daniel Hunting. We do an acoustic duo. And we've done a lot of gigs since we met in November. So just playing with some awesome musicians and loving life.
Here they are, the Kristen Lee Duo.
Something told me it was over when I saw you and her walking. Ooh, something deep down in my soul said, cry, girl. When I saw you and that girl walking round, see, I would rather go blind, boy, than to see you walk away from me. Oh, you see, I love you so much that I don't want to watch you leave me, babe. After all, I just don't want to be free, no, I don't. See, I was just sitting here thinking of your kiss and your warm embrace. Oh, when the reflection of the glass that I held to my lips, now, babe, saw the tears that were on my face, shade. See, I would rather go blind, boy, than to see you walk away from me. Oh, you see, I love you so much that I don't want to watch you leave me, babe. After all, I just don't want to be free. No, I don't. Come on, play it, Jay. Something told me it was over when I saw you and her talking. Ooh, something deep down in my soul, said Cracker. When I saw you and that girl walking round, yeah, I would rather go blind, boy, than to see you walk away from me. Oh, no, 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 no. You see, I love you so much that I don't want to watch you leave me, babe. After all, I just don't want to be free. No, I don't. I just don't want to be free. Oh, oh, oh. After all, I just don't want to be free, no.
Kristen Lee Duo. Oh my gosh. What a beautiful voice you have.
Thank you so much.
Go see them at Harpin Louis, November 10th, the Volstead, November 18th. Find them on Facebook. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. And our theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. We always want your feedback. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And you can always get our podcast on iTunes or through our app. Also, if you miss anything during the morning show, you can hear the rebroadcast every night at 8 o'clock. Up next on 1A, the Friday News Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here Monday at 9 a.m. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.